Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 143 of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Casey Bloodburn.
Hey, what's up?
How'd that Amber Alert turn out?
I don't know, actually. This one was, like, during the daytime, not like the last one. It was scary for two reasons, because also, like, you know, one, it was a child was missing, but also I thought, like, the Nazis were invading. It was so loud.
I was just talking about Michael. I don't know about your...
Oh, no, didn't you get an Amber Alert on your phone the other day?
I did.
Well, that's Michael.
And it wasn't my own. It wasn't my own.
Like a real Amber Alert. That's what I thought you were talking about.
Like a legitimate Amber Alert.
The Michael Hinderocker Amber Alert, that's old news.
I mean, that was something that happened and now he's here?
Yeah, it's more...
He turned up.
Calling that an Amber Alert is really saving me from my own stupidity.
We didn't know where you were. We almost put out an Amber Alert.
I mean, is forgetting what day we're recording a good excuse?
Not a great excuse.
I don't know that it's a great excuse, but, you know, the fact that you brought that what day we were recording and we text you an hour before to make sure that you knew and you didn't respond is, like...
Mildly concerning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, just...
It's like one of those things where it's like...
Just stupid, not dead.
Well, but if you know Michael Hinderocker, you know that, like, he's a pretty responsible person, right? So, like... Either he projects that at the very least. Yeah. So either he doesn't actually know what's going on, or he's dead.
Sure.
So yeah. One of two things was happening, and luckily it was the first. He's not dead.
Yeah. Yay.
Unless he has been reanimated, or this is an invasion.
This is Manny. Manny has taken over his body.
Yeah, you want it back on the show?
Yep, this is your daily Manny Mraz cult message. if you'd like to sacrifice a goat token, you are welcome to join the cult.
Do I get four life if I do?
No.
No, but you get Michael Hinderocker's body, which seems equally powerful. don't forget to check out our sponsor at Oasis Games. They will make you sacrifice a goat token, but they will give you 15% off of your first order by checking them out at OasisGamesCCG.com, OasisCCG.com, MTGOasis.com, and OasisGamesLLC.com.
What will they give me if I do sacrifice a goat token?
You'll have to take that up with Alex. I don't know. I'm not going to... I mean, you can use the code WouldThatBeGood to get 4% off.
Okay.
Is 4 life better than 15%?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean,
it depends on what your life total was to start with, right?
Do we get to live 20% longer if I sacrifice the goat token? Is that what the 4 life is actually worth to me?
Are you going
to
sacrifice an actual goat?
Maybe.
This all seems super aggressive.
Well, I mean, 20% longer added to your lifespan?
Seems good. I'm sacrificing a goat all the time. Yeah.
Do you want to live 20% longer?
Maybe if they're good years. It depends on, like, does it, like, just make you get that much older?
Yeah, you better sacrifice some quality goats, otherwise you're going to get some really bad percentages.
How much longer should you live if you join our Patreon?
I mean, probably not as much as sacrificing a goat, right? But, like, still pretty good.
I mean, you might actually live less long.
Where can people do that at, Michael?
You can check our Patreon out at patreon.com/ccmtg.
Thank you. Now that we're off of the sacrificing goats. Yeah, this is the best way to support the podcast, whether it's through our sponsor or through that. You can also check out mdgotraders.com. They're the best place to buy Magic Online cards, and we really appreciate them. So, there's no Patreon shoutouts this week, but don't forget to check it out at patreon.com/ccmtg. Michael, you're alive. That's what we got to out of this.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's pretty good.
I'm sure that we'll get onto that later on the show during hashtag Would That Be Good.
I saw that tweet, and yes, it embarrassed me.
Hashtag always improving. So every week on the show, we want to talk about something that makes you better at Magic the Gathering, makes us better at Magic the Gathering, not you. We don't care about you. We do later, but not right now.
Yeah, this is our time. Don't be selfish.
But yeah, every week we want to show that we are improving with you. It's not about just you getting better. It's about us always trying to improve with you every week, week in and week out. We want to show that, like, we're putting in the work. Casey, how did you get better at Magic this week?
Well, I am preparing because summer is coming, and that means it's Modern season. And I know that I'm going to have to play a lot of Modern over these next few months. And trying to really get settled into a deck or a strategy or really know the format, because it's been a little while since I really played it regularly. And just, you know, trying to get ready for it.
Michael?
I've been doing a little bit of Modern stuff as well, trying to figure out what I like. But I've also just been trying to play more. Just play a lot of leagues. just play a lot of Magic.
For me, big step. I'm actually quitting Paper Magic for the time being. I'm having a baby. And
a baby what?
A baby child, a baby human.
What?
Yeah. And so I made a decision to just quit Paper Magic for the time being and focus my weekends on trying to, like, get my house ready for the baby. My wife is super sick, so she can't help out. So it's kind of fallen upon me to get the house ready to have that child. And I decided that I can't play in PBDQs regularly while I'm trying to, like, do a website, do a podcast, do a full-time job, all while getting ready to have a baby. So it's like, what do? And it's, I play Moto twice a week, three times a week, and just quit Paper Magic, because Paper Magic takes significantly longer than Moto Magic does.
Yeah, I mean, just with travel times and also the whole it not being on your schedule thing, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just not playing Paper Magic for the time being and switching to that Moto schedule. And hopefully that means that my house can be clean and ready for the baby. And I can develop that good habit, right? Developing a good habit of keeping a clean house is way more valuable than not having it, right? Like, my house right now is just covered in laundry all the time. And if I can develop that habit of, like, doing the laundry, then it's going to be 30 minutes of my week that feels like 2 hours to start with, because it will be, because I fucking have laundry everywhere. Sorry.
Shame.
I have laundry everywhere. And if I develop that habit, then it's just this thing that will carry on through the fact of having a child. And so developing that good habit of doing X during the week, I can, once the baby is born, already be in that habit and then not have to worry about things. So because of that, I'm quitting Paper Magic for the time being and focusing more on being a dad, getting ready for a baby, and going to the Pro Tour probably sometime next year.
Dope.
Yeah. Or, I mean, win a PTQ next weekend.
I probably can't go to a Pro Tour this year, no matter what.
Can you defer a Pro Tour?
You can, but only until the first Pro Tour. So, like, you can't defer your fourth Pro Tour invite of the season to the first Pro Tour invite of the next season.
Okay. Okay, so you can only defer it.
Yeah, you can only defer it until the end of the season.
Okay.
I actually don't know that they would let you defer it twice.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I have no idea how that works.
I know that you can defer it. I just don't think you can defer it, like,
forever.
Yeah, and
decade from now, I'm definitely going to take you up on that.
I'm going to float this Pro Tour invite for a bit. Is that okay?
I'm going to float this until you guys institute a proper Pro Tour. I'm just going to be testing for that the whole time.
I'm going to crush it when it finally gets here. But someday.
I think that my hashtag always improving is, like, a pretty important step in my life. I think that a lot of people saw it coming. A lot of people have asked me about it. And yeah, I'm kind of done for a minute. I'll still be playing a ton of Moto, a ton of Cockatrice, just to stay up to date so that I can, like, do Magic content still. But yeah, I have no aspirations of going to the Pro Tour until at least 2017.
All right, well, that bunker seems down reasonable. And get ready, yeah. Like, make, yeah, you know, just like
make a baby. That happened. I made the baby.
Well, I was going to say make preparations, get yourself in the best position to be able to succeed when you can play.
Yeah, I want to be a dad first, and, you know, the baby is going to come first, and then the wife's going to come second, and then Magic's going to come third. But that doesn't mean that, like, the podcast or anything else is going to go away. It just means that I have to do it differently, and it's not going to be, like, paper PBDQs as much as it's going to be, like, just Moto grinding. Like, I've already stepped up my Moto game. I've played a lot of Moto the last week, and that's going to continue. So, Patreon participation. So every week on the podcast, if you're interested, you can become a patron of the show and ask any question you'd like, and we'll go in depth on it. This week, we have no card of the week, but we want to talk about the power rankings. So this week, we want to talk about this two standard GPs of last weekend. So huge, huge standard GPs. I don't think these points are right, though.
I'm pretty sure. Why do you not think they're right?
Because standard ramp had a top 8 and two top 32s and a top 16.
Yeah, you know what? I do think I did miss. There was a blue-green one that I think I didn't include because of the alphabet. I did see it, and I was like, oh, I need to add this back in later.
Because okay. It's blue-green, it doesn't really
anyway,
count.
So we have just red-green ramp. That's a good catch. I did miss that. So it has 7 points,
okay.
Not five.
It doesn't matter. There's a clear top three. But we have ramp decks coming in the number five, number four slot. I'm a pretty big believer in one thing right now. I think that there are two playable cards in the format, and one of them is Ulamog. Or some people call it New Ulamog. I believe that is one of the two playable cards in Standard. I don't mean playable as like you can only play two cards, but like if you're not on one of these two strategies, I think you're doing it wrong. And I think that New Ulamog is one of those cards, and this deck and those, I think that there's, whether it's the Great Aurora deck, whether it's the blue-red deck, whether it's the blue-green deck, whether it's the green-red deck, I think Ulamog is a playable card in this format because it's so good against some of the top decks.
Yeah, I mean, it is powerful. Like, it wrecks house. Like, it's really tough to beat. You have to have exactly Declaration in Stone or some equivalent most of the time to beat it. Otherwise, it's going to just kill you. And sometimes, like, just double vindicating you is enough that where even the removal spell can't save you.
So I'm assuming that the other card you think is playable in Standard is Archangel Avacyn. And do you
I actually think it's Dromoka's Command.
Dromoka's, okay. All right, so a Dromoka's Command deck.
Yeah, Dromoka's Command or Ulamog. If you're not on one of those two cards, you're doing it wrong.
Okay, well, that includes a little bit more than I thought, but I think the point still stands. Do you think that Ulamog is good in part because
it
cares so little about Avacyn and Dromoka's Command?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that like the blue-red deck and the green-red deck specifically just are good against those decks. And I also think that you're just great against all of the green-black mid-range decks. So that makes you favorite against most of the field, whereas, like, if you run into, like, blue-red flyers, like, you actually can't win. But, like, I think that it is enough of the meta where you're going to, like, find yourself in a position at a GP that if you hit those bad matchups, you're not going to top 8. But I think if we look at GP history, green-red ramp, humans, company decks, and green-white are the four best decks by a significant margin.
Sure.
And I think the reason that that happens is because of how good green-red ramp specifically is against the metagame, even though it's so bad against those flyer decks. Like,
right.
Basically, if somebody's playing a 4-4 dragon for 4 against you, you're going to lose with green-red ramp. But that's a fate that you've decided.
Yeah, you've chosen to like let that happen, and that's a pretty uncommon matchup, so it's not like...
But it's enough of a feel at a GP where like...
Yeah, it can happen to you twice.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, just inherently with ramp too, you are a little bit... You end up playing off the top a lot with ramp, and I think over 15 rounds sometimes that catches up to you, but I don't think that necessarily makes it a bad choice. Just as long as you are happy to play ramp, it seems reasonable.
Yeah, so this would have come in with about 7 points. Coming with 6 points, we have Sultai Control. I actually think this deck is the black-red dragons of this format. I played this deck a lot recently. I actually don't think it's playable.
Yeah, it's sort of like... I feel like there's a deck in every format where I'm just like, I don't get it. I don't know why you would ever play this deck. And I think that this one is that, just because I don't actually know what you're trying to hit. I don't know, like, what matchups you're salivating over with this deck.
That's the thing, is people are like, oh, I'm slightly favored in this, this, and this. And I'm like, well, you're not favored enough.
I'm kind of with you there, Casey. I'm curious. I would love to hear from people who are listening and playing this deck what exactly they feel it's good against. Because I've played this deck a fair bit. It interests me a little bit, but I haven't quite... It feels like I have all the same problems that every other Ruinous Path Languish deck I've played has, which is that you're pretty bad against Collected Company and you're not great against Gideon.
Yeah, one of our listeners, Kyle Norman, says that the main strength of this deck is its sideboard. So you're like pretty 40 against most things, and then after board you become a slight favorite. And I don't think that's good enough in this format.
I think that, so like if you expect to lose most game ones, then your sideboard...
Most by a little bit though, right?
Right, but like on average...
I agree with you, but the idea is...
Yeah.
That you win 40% of game ones and then your favorite game twos.
Right, but like it has to be by a huge margin, right? Your sideboard has to be the stone cold, like all business. which I don't think that this deck is quite there. So I think that like if you're losing 60% of game ones, becoming a 55% favorite in post-board makes for a losing strategy.
I think that the thing here is that Dragonlord Slimgar is worth so many percentage points that that's why people play it.
Sure. This is just sort of like the only Dragonlord Slimgar deck that's viable.
Not just the only Dragonlord Slimgar deck that's viable. I mean, Grixis is the only other deck that's playing any Dragonlord Slimgar.
Yeah, and I think that this one's way better.
Sure, just because you have a better proactive plan, is that the thought process?
I think that it's the idea of like mashing Jund and Grixis together to make a cohesive deck that like actually makes sense. As somebody who's played both Jund and Grixis, like they both had like these insane weaknesses, and I think that this deck does meet that happy medium, where it probably is that like pretty close to 50-50 deck in the format, but I think that like Green-White Tokens also is a 50-50 deck in the format. That's also just like a 55-45 deck.
Right.
And so you should just be playing Green-White instead.
Right.
It's a little bit better on average, I feel like, in just about every matchup.
But what is the point here? One of the points is you get to play good Nissa versus bad Nissa. I think that Nissa, voice of, or what is the name of the card?
It's Vastwood Seer.
Yeah, I think Vastwood Seer is significantly better than the 1-8-8 Crash. I think that if I'm flipping this Planeswalker, it's times three of the Plant Token one.
Yeah, the Plant Token one, a lot of people are moving away from it, only playing two or zero.
Yeah, and they're playing more of the
Vastwood Seer. Yeah. And it's for the same reason. When the format revolved around ground creatures attacking, the Voice of Zendikar was so powerful. But now it's not really that. We're not really in that format anymore. That card loses a lot of luster.
I would say when you're trying to grind out when people were playing more Grixis and that style of deck, playing more Planeswalkers made a lot of sense because it gave you resilience against Languish. But now that we're playing a format that seems to much more revolve around Green-White Mirrors and that kind of stuff,
but
you're looking at like trying to go a little bit bigger than the other green-white decks gives you a real edge.
If that's true, then why would you... It seems like even in the format where like you're a little bit bigger than them with like whether it's Gitrog Monster or whatever you're doing, it just feels like Dromoka's Command is still better than anything you could be doing out of these bug decks.
Oh, no, that's why I'm saying... I'm talking about Nissa Vastwood Seer in the context of
green-white. Nissa Vastwood Seer is better in this format than Nissa Voice of Zendikar by a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I've been workshopping a lot of different ways to minimize the number of Nissa Voice of Zendikars I've been playing just because it's kind of a do-nothing card right now.
So let's move on to Bant Company. So we have Bant Company and Bant Human Company tied both at 26 points. Both of these decks are Dromoka's Command decks, but split pretty evenly among top 8s and top 16s in the GPs last weekend. You should be playing Bant Humans. It's the better version of the deck.
I think that Bant Company is favored in the Mirror, which I think is enough incentive that it's close.
If you're playing the Eldrazi Displacer version of Bant Human Company, I think that you're pretty close to 50-50 in the Mirror and it doesn't matter. And that you're so much favored against other decks that you should be playing that version.
I'm not sure. I think it's actually pretty close. I think like among these top decks that Bant Company, like traditional Bant Company, is a little bit better. I think that among the...
I don't think that Bant Company is favored against any other deck other than Bant Human Company. Entire top five.
I think that it's a little bit... I think that neither of them are favored against Green-White, but I think that Bant Company has a better shot at it.
I think that Bant Company is worse against both Sultai and Ramp than Bant Human Company is.
Right, and that's what I was going to say. Against, like, the top decks, I think that Bant Company is a little bit better. Against, like, every other deck,
field
Bant
rather
Humans is a little bit better.
Okay.
So it depends on how inbred your metagame has become.
Michael?
My experience with these has basically been that this is sort of like green white moving up the curve a little, like moving up to be a little bit bigger. The Bant Company deck is a little bit bigger than the Bant Human Company deck. So every once in a while, the Human Company deck gets these really explosive draws where it gets under the Bant Company deck. But in general, when you're playing a long drawn out game, I'd rather be the deck playing Jace and Nissa's than the deck playing Lamholt Pacifists.
But they both play Nissa.
But you're playing generally more of them, more trackers.
So is Nissa the best card in this format that nobody's talking about? We're all talking about it right now, so let's just talk about it now. Is Nissa Vastwood Seer like is this card the bee's knees? Because I think every deck that's any deck should be playing it. I'm playing it in Greenard Ramp. I'm playing it in Sultai. I'm playing it in both company decks. Some number of the token decks are playing it. Is that actually the best card in the format right now?
No, but I do think that it is a kind of a dark horse. Like, it is surging in popularity.
So we could talk about this card probably during our training grounds.
I think it's great in the kind of games that this format is promoting, which as things get more and more solidified, as we basically reach the end of this standard season, it feels like you're basically trying to kind of go just slightly over the top,
which makes of the other Nissa a little bit better.
Which makes Nissa very good in comparison. Like, Nissa does not look great when you're playing against white-red.
So
I think it's also not great, like, on turn three, right?
It depends on how many you're playing, right? If you're playing three of them rather than one of them, then the Borderland Ranger version of the card is still good, right?
Because it's serviceable.
I think that it's very good against the aggro deck, and then it's pretty reasonable. Like, if they want to spend a removal spell on it, good for them. I think it's a significantly... I think that in this format, it's significantly better than Borderland Ranger. And Borderland Ranger is near and dear to my heart.
Wait, but what was the most Borderland Rangers you've ever registered in a deck?
That weren't Nissa Vastwood Seers?
Yeah, that were Borderland Rangers.
Two.
Right. Which is like I think that on average, it's not like a great card to play.
That's not the same. What's the most like anyone's ever registered? I think people have registered for Pilgrim's Eye.
Don't even get me started on Pilgrim's Eye. That's a whole separate thing.
That's a bad Borderland Ranger. And people registered for.
Yeah, but that was specifically in Splinter Twin, right? Where like you were just desperate for cards that filtered your deck.
Yeah. Also, they were just trying to Splinter Twin to block Squadron Hawks, and that's weird. but what I want to say here, what I want to talk about here is, so we have Bant Company, and we have Bant Human Company, and I'm going to assign roles here. Casey, you're going to defend Bant Human Company. Michael, you're going to defend regular Bant Company. Casey, why are you playing regular Bant Company?
Why am I not?
Yeah, why are you not? Sorry.
Because I think that the explosive nature of Bant Humans being able to play Thalia's Lieutenants, if you can company into double Lieutenant, that's usually enough to win the game. And in post-board matchups where you have Displacer, being able to Displacer your own Lieutenant usually makes your guys enough bigger than your opponents that you can attack through anything.
Michael, they both have 26 points. Why are you playing a regular Bant Company rather than Human Company?
Because when I'm playing against the Human Company deck, the combination of more Nissas, more Jaces, and the full set of Tireless Trackers in addition to the full set of Eldrazi Displacers gives me a better long game.
So I'm going to argue against both of you, and then you're going to counter, okay?
Okay.
Michael, you're only favored against one deck out of these entire five that we just talked about versus the regular Human Company deck. Why is that better?
How many decks do you think the Human Company deck is favored against, I think, is the
all
question.
Of the they're better against all of the rest of them than you just said.
But how much better? I mean, if I think I'm winning the pseudo mirror, and I think I can outplay green white players who aren't exceptional, I think Bant Company is a perfectly reasonable decision.
Casey, you're not favored against Bant Company, but is that enough? Do you care?
So I think that you're both small underdogs to green white.
Is better against green white? Are you better, or is Michael better?
Probably Michael. Eldrazi Displacer is enough. Is better.
But you're both playing Eldrazi Displacer. If you're both playing
four Eldrazi Displacer is better.
Okay.
And like most of the human decks don't play four, especially not main deck.
They usually play three, and then
so what makes you good enough against the meta to make your decision then?
Because the deck is on average probably a turn to a turn and a half faster, which means that you are less punished by control decks.
Are you saying that your collected companies are just so much better than his that it's worth playing your version of the deck?
I think that the deck, like, you just get boots on the ground faster. You actually kill your opponent, where, like, that's a grindier deck, where against a deck like Ramp, you might not have time to grind them out, and you need to actually kill them dead. So against sort of the random or the field, then this deck is a little bit better.
I can agree with that on the whole.
Well, you're not supposed to. It's supposed to be my decision. But I think that it's close. I think that the players playing Bant Company that are doing well at GPs have also been playing Bant Company the whole time.
Or are really good players. I mean, there was one weekend where like a handful of great players picked it up and mostly did quite well with it. And I think that's the thing, ultimately, in this standard format. Like, there are probably realistically three decks that are like tier one-ish and have been for the past...
I think there are three tier one decks. I think that they all involve one card. And then I believe that every other deck is a tier 1.5 card or 1.5 deck, and it all involves another card.
Fair enough.
I think that we all agree on that, too.
Yeah, I mean, Jermoko's Command is very tough. It's hard for me to justify playing a creature deck that's not playing Jermoko's Command if I can play a creature deck that's playing Jermoko's
Command. Let's talk about our number one deck, because it actually is the lowest it's ever ranked as number one. It's always ranked as number one.
Yeah, there was other one last week. 2 weeks ago, right?
No, it was last week.
Last time we did standard.
So one standard rankings ago. And that's Green White Tokens. It came in at number two last time, where Tom Ross got some help from Kyrie Irving. But what's going on here? Is this deck faltering? I think the answer is no.
No, I think that people
people are just so sick of it.
Yeah, I think that everybody is like basically pre-boarded for it. They've built their entire deck with how can I maximize my win percentage against green white, which
and like, it's still not working.
Yeah, it's not. It is working.
It is working. It's coming in at half the points it's normally had, and also
define working.
Well, it's not Cobbled numbers.
That's true. So it is a deck that can be beat, and
that's not true. It can't be beat. It can be beat individually, you probably can't
beat it in the aggregate.
So as far as like a numbers game, if half the people show up to a tournament with green white, they're going to win with green white, right? Right,
sure.
But if you want to be favored against green white, you can be favored against green white. So that may be what you're trying to say.
Yes. Yes, I mean, that's definitely possible, but at the same time,
Where are we at? Are we with... I've seen... So here's my thoughts, and then we'll all just talk about it, because I think this is the deck going into whatever the next format is. I think it's two Den Protectors, one to two... what is the sacrifice creature card?
Angelic Purge?
Evolutionary Leap. Angelic Purge out of the board. And then... 2 to 3 Landhold Pacifist in the main. I think that is currently the deck that you should be playing. And then the rest of it kind of fills out itself. Is anyone in disagreement with that?
I mean, there are a few different ways you could build it. I don't know that it even matters that much besides the fact that just the you way could, that the way
I like, think that there's the Pete approach, which is the mono aggro approach.
And then there's the Michael Majors approach that's like green white control.
And then there's the happy medium, which is what I would prefer. The deck that I'm 12-2 with, or 13-2 with on Modo.
Yeah. I like that as a whole. I would say I would be cautious about playing too many Evolutionary Leaps.
The one that I've been playing on Modo is Quint. I just play on Quentin's account, and he just has whatever the updated version is, which I think it might be 3 Evolutionary Leap in the main, which in my opinion is too many.
I think that's way too many if you ever play against aggro ever.
Yeah, I want 1-2 in the main, and then I would like 2 total in the main and side.
Yeah, I like 1-1.
That's my opinion too. And then I want 2 Den Protector in the main. 2-3 Lamphold Pacifist, 2 Hangerback Walker. That's my version of the deck. There's flex numbers here. I want Angelic Purge out of the board. Michael, where are you at? Where are you at with this deck? What makes this deck tick for you? Do you like I call it the Pete version. I watched Pete, who's a Utah player who went to the last Pro Tour, who just plays this deck as an aggro deck. He literally goes 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, no matter what. That is, he plays as many... I think he plays the full 4... what's the 1X spell? Makes tokens?
The Hangerback Walker?
Secure the Waste?
I believe he plays 4 Secure the Waste.
Oh, really?
To That's just intense. Fill out his curve. And he just curves out every game. I believe he plays 2 Hangerback Walkers, 4 Lamhole Pacifists, 4 Jermoko's Command, just to, like, get there. Where are you guys at? Are you on the super aggressive version of this deck, the super control version of this deck, or the mid-range version? I would be on the mid-range version. I want to just be in the middle and then deciding where I'm at accordingly.
So I would say for a PPTQ, the middle ground. For a GP, probably the control deck, because you're going to play even more mirror matches on average. And that's that version is pretty favored in the Green White Mirror.
I agree with Casey on that. I think generally I'm happier playing a little bit more of a controlling build, even up to two leaps in the main. But But I think really the key
at a GP,
like,
though, you wouldn't do that at a PPDQ.
I would probably play it that way at a PPDQ as well.
Feel like I sideboard on my leaps a lot.
I would play the version you're most comfortable with. I think there are a lot of versions that make sense depending on what exactly you want the deck to do. And as long as you're happy with it, if you're playing that basic shell, you are playing very close to an optimal deck. Okay. I don't think it's...
I think we've all given our opinions on the best deck. I think that green-white is the best deck. We're going to see a new format in a couple weeks. But there's a PPDQ tomorrow. We haven't won one yet. Casey, what would you play and why in standard?
So, actually, I think that for PPDQs next weekend, I am probably on Bant Company.
Like regular Bant Company?
Yeah, like regular Bant Company. I think that it's the most flexible deck, and I think that people are throwing a lot at the walls right now, where, like, flexibility is... I feel more comfortable with flexibility than with power when I'm playing against, like, just random decks.
Michael, you don't have a PPDQ next weekend because you already won one, but, like, what are you playing next weekend if you had one?
I think I would play Bant Company as well. Odd as that may sound, it's just like a deck I'm really comfortable with, a deck I really like, and a deck that I do think is quite well positioned at the moment. Plus, I think in general, green-white in some of the grindier matchups can actually be a little bit tricky to play, and I think that if you are playing one of these other decks really well, you can still... Even if you would say your green-white matchup is slightly below 50-50, if you're very well prepared, I think you can... definitely win against green white at like a PPTQ level.
When did I become a brewer?
Off and on.
But has it? It feels like it's been a while.
That you've. I think it's because you hate all the decks, so you're brewing out of desperation.
I'm on green red or rug. Let's go into our training. So every week on the podcast, we talk about something that's going to make you better at Magic or better at life in general. This week, we're talking about something pretty sweet. We're going to talk about understanding role players. All right, Casey, press your mute button.
No.
So we're going to talk about the importance of Grey Merchant of Asphodel.
To gain you back the life that you lost from your card that was actually good, Underworld Connections?
All right, so here's the thing. So back in 2 years ago of Magic, there was a card called Grey Merchant of Asphodel. And there were two really important cards in that deck. One of them was Underworld Connections, and one of them was Thoughtseize. And what's important in these decks is that you gain so much advantage from your Thoughtseize and Underworld Connections, but you still needed something to bring you over the top to not lose to the fact that you were playing so many Underworld Connections and Thoughtseize. So how do you do that? And what the world found was the perfect card called Grey Merchant of Asphodel. And this is what we call a role player. Now, a common mistake that people have is they confuse role players with great cards. And what happens is Mono Black Devotion is created in things like Modern and Pauper based upon Grey Merchant of Asphodel, when in fact the important cards were Thoughtseize and Underworld Connections and Pack Rat.
And Desecration Demon.
And all of that's another role player, I think, though.
Its role, yeah, I mean, kind of. Its role was to kill you dead.
The best role of all.
But what's important here is, like, could this deck have existed without Grey Merchant? Yes and no. You still needed a card like Grey Merchant to bring you over the top. There's a card that gains you life and deals them damage equal to the number of swamps in play.
Corrupt.
Corrupt probably could have done the same job. But you had Grey Merchant, so it didn't matter. But what was important here is the fact that you had something to recoup that life and advance your game plan at the same time. Whether that was Corrupt or Grey Merchant, it didn't really matter. What was important is that it existed in that format to recoup and bring about your game plan in the way that you wanted. Casey, when I think about role players, I think about basketball players. I think about people in basketball. I think about Jeremy Lin.
Sure.
I think about my favorite basketball player probably of all time that isn't John Stockton, Richard Hamilton. I think about players that literally won championships that never got credit for it.
Calling Richard Hamilton a role player is harsh for and any basketball.
I am a severe Detroit Pistons fan. Like they're my team. I think Richard Hamilton won all of those championships, but I think he was a role player.
Or
I'm glad that you feel how I feel. I feel like he's underappreciated, but he's a role player.
How about another great Detroit Pistons / role player, Dennis Rodman?
Yeah, that's absolutely.
He was an obliterator on defense, right? Like, he was so tough to get through and had rebounds and blocks and steals out the yin yang. But like, basically,
I want to time out for a second. I appreciate that you don't find Richard Hamilton to be a role player.
Dennis Rodman is not a role player. You can't name all stars and then say they're role players.
But how do they? Are they an all star on every team?
No, but
that's what makes them they're great at being role players, right? Graham Merchant of Asphodel became an all star, but Graham Merchant of Asphodel wasn't an all star on every team.
Okay, actually, Richard Hamilton might be an all star on every team. Dennis Rodman,
he's not an all star on every team. He played for three teams. He was only an all star on one.
When
was he in his prime?
I think he was only an all star twice. Rodman.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Hamilton. I was like, I think he was like a four-time All-Star.
But like generally recognized, right, as like the one of the best rebounders of all time.
We're getting into basketball for real right now. Okay. This is a Magic podcast. How do you define? We're going to just go separately here then. Michael, when you think about role players, you also think about basketball, right?
So my thought is this. Like, you can have cards that are less good
in a vacuum. No, I want you to talk about basketball.
All right, so when I think of basketball, I think of there are a lot of players. When I think of guys who make the NBA who aren't like obviously everyone in the NBA is super talented, but when there are sometimes players where like they might not be better overall players than other players who aren't making it in the NBA, but what they are good at doing is knowing what they're good at and doing that one thing well. If Dennis Rodman had decided he wanted to be a three-point specialist, he probably would have been out in the NBA in about 10 minutes, right? Because he would have just like bricked 30 in the row, the coach would have told him to get lost, and that's it. So there might be like there might be a better overall player.
Isn't that what
player.
Makes him a role player, though?
Right, but this is what I'm saying. So there might be someone who could beat Dennis Rodman in a game of one-on-one.
A lot of people.
Right, because they could maybe shoot better than him or whatever. So if you're in a three-point contest or if you're just looking for like the prettiest game, maybe Dennis Rodman isn't what you're looking for or he doesn't catch your eye initially.
Casey, what about you? What NBA was the thing that came, but when we talked about this, that was the thing that came to our mind. It wasn't that outside linebacker, right? That wasn't the thing that we thought about. It wasn't that fullback. Even though that fullback could have been the thing we thought about. Because that fullback actually has so much impact on the game. Or even that offensive line, right? Those could have been the things that we thought about. But that's not what we thought about when we thought about role players. We thought about Dennis Rodman. We thought about Richard Hamilton. We thought about Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, we thought that because it's easier to explain, right? Football role players are like way more X and O's. Like,
it's true. The offensive line for the Dallas Cowboys won more championships than every other position combined. But it's not as easy to explain why that offensive line won. It's easier to compare Jeremy Lin to Graham Merchant of Asphodel, right? Those are an easier comparison than that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of offensive to Jeremy Lin because I think he's an all right guy. But
I mean, yeah. Graham Merchant of Asphodel probably is, like, you know, a lot older and...
Hold on. No. What are we talking about here?
Yeah. No, but the reason that we compared is because it's easy to think of. It's like, you know, we could have gone a lot of different ways. We could have gone side dishes. We could have gone any number of ways to define what a role player is.
No, that's true. We could have talked about, like, potato chips on your hamburger. That's a great role player.
So I like this comparison, though, because there are a lot of players who are worse players in a vacuum but better players for the team that they're on.
Yeah, what's the guy on the... The Warriors right now. Wait, Sean Livingston?
Sure. Yeah, that guy's
never won a game in his life until he got on that team.
Right, but he's the only one that can shoot from on the inside of the three-point line.
On that whole team?
Right.
And so he plays an important role on that team. Jeremy Lin played an important role on the Knicks. That role was not being Carmelo Anthony and not being Amari Stoudemire. He played an important role. I think that the same thing is true of both Richard Hamilton and, well, they maybe have been all-stars. I think Richard Hamilton and Dennis Rodman did different things, right? Scottie Pippen was a lockdown defender, right?
That is true.
Yeah. He and Dennis Rodman could have stopped anyone you wanted them to stop. Hands down. Either one of them. You put them on somebody, they're not scoring. But what is the importance of having Dennis Rodman as your second lockdown defender, even though he probably only scores 6 points?
Because he ate Karl Malone's lunch.
Is that good enough? The fact that you could stop John Stockton and Karl Malone at one time, even though Michael Jordan probably couldn't guarded either of them, let's be honest. He actually had to literally push off of John Stockton.
Well, it's about knowing what your team needs, right? Like, another alpha scorer, even though he might be a better one-on-one player than Rodman, doesn't necessarily fit on a team where you already have the greatest alpha scorer of all time.
You already have Jordan, right? It doesn't matter what else. Like,
right, your overall value is going to be diminished. And I think this is true.
I think this actually applies to Magic Tickers really well, right? Where what is the value what is the role player in Greenlight Tokens right now? Is it Hangerback Walker? Is it Lamphole Pacifist?
I think Hangerback Walker is a great role player in that deck, mainly because it showcases its flexibility. It's not a great attacker. It's not always even a great blocker, but it can sort of do a good enough job of being a good top deck in the late game.
It does
the ability
what you want.
To flip Avacyn instantly, and the ability to sometimes provide you a bunch of flyers with which to put tokens on with Nissa. Like, its versatility gives it a lot of value in a deck where I rarely feel like, oh, I'm losing to Hangerback Walker. But I've certainly lost a lot of games where my opponent played a Hangerback Walker.
I think that when I think of role players, I think of Grey Merchant of Asphodel versus, I think Dennis Rodman might be the perfect example, right? I don't think that team wins way less championships without Dennis Rodman. And I think that that deck...
Probably at least two less, right?
Well, there's the thing. When we think about black-white, or black, mono-black, right? We think about green-black, we think mono-black. But if you think about Reed Duke, Huey Jensen, and Owen Turnwell, they ended up playing black-white with no Grey Merchant of Asphodel, right? That deck was actually figured out that you could play that deck without it, and get the same response, right? Because you had a card like Blood Baron of Viscopa to recoup you that life, and also was great in the metagame, you actually didn't need Grey Merchant. You actually could recoup that life and also be favored against different decks, and also play greater cards like Sin Collector, things like that. And you had this cohesive game plan. But the thing that happened is that Grey Merchant still bridged that gap, right? He was still the thing that made that deck exist. To begin with, he might not have been the most important thing, but he was the thing that was like, we need something like this. So the thing is that, do you need Dennis Rodman? No, you need a Dennis Rodman, not the Dennis Rodman.
Right. I mean, we could do a whole podcast on great role players of history, right? Farseek, Squadron Hawk.
Squadron Hawk is a great example. We could do a role players of history podcast. The thing that I wanted to talk about is like, I want to debate / give examples. And the ones that we kind of talked about here, we already talked about one of them. So ramp spells, right? Whether it's Arbor Elf, whether it's one of my favorites, Avacyn's Pilgrim, Farseek. These are different, right? So when you think about something like Rampant Growth or Cultivate or even Nissen's Pilgrimage, those are typically actual parts of your game plan. But when you think about things like the things that I just talked about, right? Whether it's one of Casey's favorite cards, Battlecall Mystic, or Farseek, or Avacyn's Pilgrim, these were different parts of a game plan, right?
Right. Those were tempo accelerators. Like, right. I'm going to play my 3-drop on turn 2, try and beat it, sucker.
Yeah. Jund was one of the best decks in Standard twice, right? There was the Blood Red Elf version, and then there was the Farseek version. And the Farseek version was far more favored when it had Farseek than when it didn't. And the reason that it had that is that Farseek was such a great role player in the deck. It fixed your mana and got you to your Huntmaster faster.
Right, but like, you would never play, like, there was a double Farseek Ranger's Path in that format. You would never play that in Jund because that wasn't the strategy.
Unless you wanted to beat Jund.
Sure, you would play that in a deck, the most insane deck ever against Jund played that card, but you would never play that card in Jund because it didn't fit your game plan.
So I want you to play the other side, Michael. What is your debate that maybe these aren't that great in those decks?
Well, I mean, obviously those cards have worked out well in those decks historically, but I think it's about finding balance, right? Where, like, you have to find the line between this is a deck that can use Farseequel when we draw it, and you know, let's start playing Rampant Growth alongside our Farseek so we draw them. Like there's kind of a line, and I think if you start crossing that line, they stop becoming role players and start becoming central elements of the deck.
So I want to talk about two other things that are debate slash examples of role players. And Casey brought up a good point, and I brought up a good, I mean, we talked about this together, but removal spells. Michael, what is Path to Exile to you in Zoo? Is that a role player or a key element? In modern Zoo.
In Zoo. I feel like Path is
it's one of those necessary like evils.
You have to play it. You don't always feel good about it, but it's sort of, there are like cards that otherwise you're just not really going to be able to beat, and so Path to Exile just says
it's the Matthew Dellavedova of removal spells.
It dives at their knees.
You don't feel great that's right in your deck, knees. But like, what are you going to do if you don't have one?
Lose? Right. It's like you have to do it, but like the matchups where you get to board it out, you feel like big man on campus. Well,
you
right?
get one yeah, more you don't have to play Matthew Dellavedova, but you got to.
Right. You got to do it when you needed to get Tarmogoyfs and other garbage like that out of your way. But when your opponent wasn't playing creatures and was
he
ready to
took 5,000 for you that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Right.
And it's funny that I bring it back to basketball, but it's so easy to compare, right? The fact that Matthew Dellavedova is good for 5,000 is not nothing.
Not at all.
No, it's 5,000 you didn't have otherwise. The guy can actually play some amount of basketball and also can absorb.
Well, it's matchups in both, right? It's like matchups in basketball and matchups in Magic, right? Yeah. Where like
what
certain
are you, what,
cards.
Try to explain what I'm explaining.
So, in like, say you're playing against a bigger, more physical point guard. So you're playing against, I don't know, Michael Carter Williams, and Kyrie Irving keeps getting posted up by him. So you're saying like, okay, Kyrie Irving, great player, but he's not defending here well. Or you're trying to, you know, get your Wild Nacatl through a Tarmogoyf, and you just can't do it. So
we're
say,
not, we're
all
not,
right.
We're not talking about Tyreek Evans versus Kyrie Williams, right? Neither of those, or Kyrie Irving. We're not talking about Tyreek Evans versus Kyrie Irving, right? Neither of those players are playing defense. We're talking about Wild Nacatl versus, or Tarmogoyf versus Path, right? We're talking about literally putting Rajon Rondo onto the field versus Kyrie Irving. Talking about a guy that isn't—he's not a scorer, right? We're talking about making a plan for something that could go wrong for you, right? You have the idea in a basketball game is matchups. You want to be either bigger, smaller, or better than the thing in front of you. And in Magic, if you're going smaller and something bigger goes in front of you, Path to Exile gains equity.
Right. Right, where it's not good in every matchup. There are times where you're going to draw Path if it's in your main deck and say, oh boy, I really wish this was literally any other card in my
deck.
But
you also wouldn't cut it from your main deck because of the times that you want to beat Tarmogoyf.
Because it's so necessary.
Yes.
Right, so it's sort of like having a 3-point specialist. But, right, it's like you don't need it all the time, but when you need it, you're really glad it's an option.
But Casey, that's one set of removal, right? Whereas on the other side, I'm playing Jund. Is Lightning Bolt a role player, or is it necessary?
Yeah, exactly. It becomes, at that point, part of the plan. You're signing up to play 13, 15 removal spells in that deck because you're here to kill creatures and chew bubblegum, and you're all out of gum. Like, that's why you're playing Jund. That's why you're playing all these removal spells. So, like, you actually couldn't... You almost can't board out all of your removal spells most of the time in Jund because it's not possible. You look at your sideboard, it's just more removal. Just different kinds. Like, you can't actually board out all of your removal because that's what the deck is. So Lightning Bolt is not a role player, it's what you're doing. It's what you signed up for.
And that's a completely different role than Path plays in those Zoo decks.
Right. Like, somebody like...
So go ahead.
Andrew Iguodala on the Warriors is a role player. On a lot of teams, he would be a key contributor.
No, he would be he won Finals MVP, right?
Right.
So in that matchup, he was an all-star. But in other matchups, he was the sixth man of the year. And that's two different things, right, Michael?
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to, like, what you're playing against, right? You're going to have cards which really shine in some matchups and are merely okay or even crappy in others. But that's just kind of the nature of Magic. I mean...
So, if we were to break this down to its basics, Michael, How would you explain basketball role players and Magic role players in a vacuum? Why are they so similar? Why can we easily compare Andrew Iguodala against something like
Terminate?
Yeah, Terminate. Why is that so easy to do?
I think it's because of kind of the team building or deck building nature of both sports. It's like when a GM is constructing a basketball team, they're cognizant of the teams they think they're going to have to face.
So I'm a huge Pistons fan, right?
Uh-huh.
I just signed Drummond. I already know what my team is built for. It's built around this guy, this all-star.
So this is what you've signed up for, right? Your belief as the Pistons GM is that Andre Drummond, it gives you, you know, you're saying Andre Drummond is my Archangel Avison or whatever, right?
I think, exactly. I think that he is the centerpiece. Now my job is to make sure that, it's kind of like Shaquille O'Neal, right? Shaquille O'Neal is my centerpiece.
Right.
My job is to make sure that Shaquille O'Neal is not decimating me.
Right. You're not gonna surround Archangel Avison. You're not gonna play Avison and Ulamog in the same deck, right? Because they don't work together. Just
exactly.
Like you wouldn't probably sign Andre Drummond and
Dwight Howard. They're not on the same team.
Right. Sure. It's probably not a good fit.
Why? Why don't I want to play the best cards?
Somebody has to shoot. Right, somebody has to play a different role.
There's only
you can't
only,
fill your deck with.
You can only play so many finishers.
Removal,
right?
And no
you,
creatures.
So, yes. So I want to talk about two things here because I think that we're getting to the next point, and that's small guys and bridging the gap. So when I'm on the play, Nissa's Pilgrimage is probably the best card in Standard right now. If I'm on the play,
yeah,
because
it's legit,
it beats
a powerhouse.
Yeah, it beats Lamholt Pacifist. And it puts me ahead of their Sylvan Advocates, right? So if I'm playing big ball, Andre Drummond is probably the best player that I could have on my team.
Sure.
Because he's young, athletic, and he's going to score more points and more blocks than even Dwight Howard. So he's become not a role player. So my next job is to find out what do I need to surround him with. It wasn't Brandon Jennings, right? We cut him. We decided that Reggie Jackson was better. How do we incorporate something like that? There are teams filled with role players, and there are decks filled with role players, right? The blue-green ramp deck, that's not a deck of all-stars, right? That's a deck of role players. You're playing 8 counter spells, and then Ulamog. Like, your deck is...
Blue-green or blue-red?
Blue-red, sorry. Okay.
Sure, sorry, just making sure we're
no,
on the same
I messed
page
up. You're
as far
right.
as what we're talking about. I totally agree with that, though. And then it's just like, it's about finding, you see this in sports a lot where like, so Andre Drummond looks great and he's big and physical, but then you play against the Warriors and they're playing Draymond Green at center or whatever, right? So you're on defense and you're getting killed because Andre Drummond is trying to like switch pick and rolls over and over again on the perimeter.
Right.
So
it's that doesn't happen because they don't play the same conference. That's why.
Okay, but
that's why he got a max deal.
But just in the same sense,
so
right?
You're playing against the Raptors. It's the same game plan.
So sometimes though, you're playing your Nissa's Pilgrimage and they play a turn 2 Lamholt Pacifist and they went first.
And then
your Nissa's Pilgrimage looks real stupid.
Right. So Casey, how does let's go outside of basketball? Let's go outside of the Magic. How does that fullback or that offensive lineman compare to something? It's like a lightning strike. This card that we don't have.
Well, because they both do literally the exact same thing. They get people out of your way, right? Whether they're coming at your quarterback and you need to, you know, give yourself some peace, or they're coming at, or so you need to get them out of the way so that you can attack down the field.
Right. So you're either pushing them out of the way for your running back or your halfback.
Right. Or you're clearing them out of the way of your quarterback.
So that your quarterback can either pass or run, right? So they're creating their own role in the form of unity, right? Whether that's in the form of a ramp spell or whatever it's doing, it's creating a better game plan for you in the long run.
It's allowing your game plan to gel, right? If you instead of having a fullback, you had an extra receiver out running a route,
it just doesn't do the same thing.
Your quarterback gets clobbered. Right, he never gets the ball off, so the extra
especially
receiver
if they're,
didn't help.
Right, so like if they're running a 4-3 instead of a 3-4. You're in trouble.
Right. You just get clobbered.
Yeah. They actually just have an extra defensive end and your guy is on a 2-on-1 and he gets caught. That's it. That's the end of the story.
Right.
On a blitz. You actually can't stop it. And the thing is like, why is that comparable to Magic? We're talking about a completely different game.
Well, because it's the same thing where the fullback isn't the star of the show, right?
And neither is Gray Merchant.
Right. It could be a shallow trench you dug during the huddle. It doesn't matter. As long as it trips somebody up and gets them out of the way.
So, I like that. It's true.
So, like, just no, like, it doesn't and have that to could be lightning
all,
strike.
That could be all that Drew Brees needs, right? All he needs is that shallow trench.
Exactly.
He needs and then he can throw something. I mean, can you imagine Case Keenum with a shallow trench in front of him?
He'd be unstoppable.
He would never lose a down.
Man, hope you don't step up in the pocket.
Case Keenum never steps up in the pocket. He's too short. But the point is, that's the thing that we're talking about. What I want to talk about here is small guys or bridging the gap. They serve the same purpose. What does that hanger back walker inside of your ramp deck do? You're not playing that hanger back walker to be a 4-4 for 8, right? No, you're playing that hanger back walker
to gum up the works, right?
Yeah.
Just be present, be there, be wall of roots or wall of omens. Just be in the way, present and accounted for, and as a hindrance to your opponent.
Right. If your deck can be made up of small guys, right? You can play 17 one drops, but the goal of those 17 one drops is not the fact that you're playing 17 one drops a lot of the time. Sometimes you play two drops just because you don't have two drops. You actually just need two drops. In some formats, you just can't afford not to play them. So that's it. That's what you're doing.
I think like when you're talking about ramp,
I have no idea what you just said.
They're sort of
you really not?
No, because you said two drops a bunch of times, and I think you meant to switch back between two drops and one drops at least once.
No, I didn't. I mean like
two drops.
No,
so that's all I got out of that sentence.
So sometimes there are formats where you wish you didn't have to play a two drop, right? Where you just wish that you could just play your Cultivates and your Harrows.
I've never wanted that, no.
Well, you're just a bad person. But at some point, you have to just be like, you know what? I actually just need to play this Ogre Battlement. It's just... you have to block a Goblin Guide sometime.
Right, because it's there. You need something to be there.
Right.
It straight doesn't matter what it is.
This happens, though, even in decks where you're not necessarily... Where the example isn't as obvious as it is with ramp. You're just sort of... Not everyone can be the hero. You have to have sort of hero enablers.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? You can't just be... Every card can't be Kalidus.
Well,
some cards need to be right. Not Kalidus.
You can't sign Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. You know, you can only have one quarterback.
Yeah, you certainly right. can't sign. I mean, you probably could at this point. I think Peyton Manning would take $12, but because he'd get sponsorships elsewhere. But you certainly can't have Russell Wilson and
you can't play the team of all quarterbacks, right? You need cards that do different things.
Casey's a huge fantasy football fan. Casey would tell you, you only need. You can just have the Cincinnati quarterback. What is his name, Casey?
Andy Dalton.
You can just have Andy Dalton as your backup. Like, there's only so many people that you need to have that fill that role. It's that role that you need, right? You don't need every player to be green, right?
No, you just need people to do a job. You need a running back, right? If you can't run the ball, you need deep zones all the time.
Yeah. You need more than just a running back. You need pieces that fit what you have. And I think that's where like decks with a really strong identity tend to shine. Like when you just have a deck where like the pieces fit together well and every card has a defined purpose, you tend to have a good deck.
Let's look at a deck that didn't have this. Esper Humans, right? Every card in that deck was reasonable in a vacuum. There wasn't a bad card in that deck, but the deck was straight nonsense because, like, the roles weren't clearly defined. Was it a beatdown deck? Was it a tempo deck? Was it a Wrath of God control deck? What even was happening in this deck? Because they weren't role players. They were just cards.
No, I think that's important, right? What is your point in playing 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop Wrath?
I still don't know. I've been trying to figure it out for years.
Somebody figured it out, right? Your favorite player in the world figured it out.
Well, or their opponents really didn't figure it out and they got them that way.
Yeah, that's what I think must have been.
I think that I think that's something that's important. I was trying to find the deck list from back in the day for me, the four color Farseek Abyssinian Pilgrim deck that I played at the SCG, where it's like the deck was mostly role players, right? It was Farseeks, Abyssinian Pilgrims, Borderland Rangers, and then Abyssin Restoration Angels and Thragtusks, right? It was, and then Bonfire of the Damned. It was like this very.
I don't know what Bonfire of the Damned was, but it wasn't a role player.
Okay.
That was the J.R. Smith of the deck, right?
That's sometimes insulting to Bonfire.
Sometimes it doesn't do anything because you draw it, and then sometimes it, you know, comes into play off the bench and just gets your opponent, like, and you don't know what happened.
Just happened.
Oh, he scored 30 in 8 minutes.
Sick. But the thing that I wanted to think about is, like, how important is it to have things that you know you need? Things that are different. And I think that we see this in the form of fun-ups. People call them fun-ups, right? They're these one-of cards that it's like, all right, I played 3 Bonfires and 1 Mizzium Orders. Why did I play that Mizzium Orders, Casey?
Because everybody makes mistakes sometimes.
No.
Yes.
That's not the reason.
Isn't it?
No, it's not.
Because would you go back and do it again?
Absolutely. I might have just done a 2-2 split. Sometimes that Mizzium Orders is what I needed. Because having that Mizzium Orders in your opener X percentage of the time was better than having that Bonfire in your opener every time.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'll never buy this story, but I'll go along with it. So, sure, Mizzium Orders plays a role because it...
Because they're the same card in different spots.
Sure. Okay. I'm gonna let it go. They're similar. They're both red sorceries. They both kill creatures. The whole thing. It's the same. They're the same card. So, right. But they fit in different spots on the curve.
Right? Or they kill slightly different creatures or whatever, right? I mean, Mizzium Orders is probably a lot better if your opponent is on just a single creature. And likely a lot worse if they're on, you know, a bunch of Llanowar Elves and one toughness, whatever.
Right. And, like, exactly. They're just slightly different cards, and it lets you bridge the gap to get to the big Bonfire turns later. If you're losing to this Loxodon Spider now, you don't have time to top deck your Bonfire the Damned that's going to really get them.
Right. I think a lot of the time, too, one of sort of inform the purpose of the cards that are seeing more play. Casey, you had talked about this with, like, Delver decks typically playing a single Forked Bolt. And why they were choosing, you know, thinking about, okay, so why is this deck choosing Forked Bolt? There are, you know, a million different burn spells you could run as that, like, that fifth burn slot. So
right, it could be Flame Slash, it could be Burst Lightning, it could be Fire Ice, it could be Forked Bolt, it could be any number of things, but you're trying to figure out exactly which decks you are trying to beat, and which decks you are a pretty big underdog against if you don't have exactly this. Which one, because none of them are as good as Lightning Bolt, but they all are good in different situations, right?
Right, but choosing the exact right one versus something that's close can make a really big difference.
Between the 500 shocks they've printed in Magic history.
Right.
Exactly which one you're looking for. And sometimes that is just, like, a metagame decision. Sometimes it's, you know, just a personal preference thing. I've seen people play Chain Lightning in that slot, which is pretty uncommon. But, like, people do it because they would rather have a bolt, even if it's a sorcery.
It depends on how you want to play your bolts, right? If you're going to the face a lot, I have to imagine that Chain Lightning does a much better bolt impression than Fork Bolt does. But if you're trying to kill, you know,
right,
an opposing unflipped Delver or whatever, right?
So I found the deck. I want to read this to you because I think this is the definition of a role player deck. Are you ready? So we have 4 Abyssinian Pilgrim, 2 Borderland Ranger, 2 Disciple of Bolas, 4 Huntmaster of the Fells, 4 Loxodon Spider, 3 Restoration Angel, 4 Thragtusk, 2 Guruk Relentless, 1 Tragic Slip, 2 Ultimate Price, 2 Bonfire of the Dam, 4 Star Farseek, 1 Mizzium Orders, 1 Burial Rites, 24 lands. Casey, what is this deck? Beautiful, other than that.
It has Disciple of Bolas in it, so I can't be too critical of it. No, I think this deck is, it's exactly what you're saying. It's kind of, like, for the most part,
it's the sum of its parts.
Right. These cards are not, They're not Angel of Serenity or Sphinx's Revelation or Rakdos Return.
Which were all cards in this format.
Right, which were the haymakers of this format, right? These were the, oh, how can I ever, like, how am I going to win now?
Yeah, I drew into top 32 rather than playing for top 16 in this tournament. It was this tournament that were like, I also believe that it was before Jund was the best deck. I actually won states with a Jund deck in this format before this tournament, and something happened. It was, I realized, as many people realized later, that the best card in this format by a lot was Farseek. That's the best card in this format. It's also a role player, right? Farseek was the best card and also a role player. It was the Draymond Green of Standard.
Sure. Later in the Standard format, cards like Think Twice. There were people who said Think Twice was the best card in Standard, even though it was in a deck with Snapcaster Mage, Restoration Angel, and Sphinx's Revelation.
Sometimes, though, it's like people love to say things like that, and it's a little bit hyperbolic generally, but I think what it's saying really is, like, sometimes it takes a card that isn't the most powerful card in the deck to really pull it together, right? Like, this deck maybe couldn't exist without Farseek. So even though Farseek isn't, like, on paper the most powerful card, you could not replace Farseek with a more powerful card and have a better deck.
Right, you couldn't just be like, I'm going to cut these Farseeks for Angels of Serenity, because that card's way better.
Right,
because it's a totally different card.
Obviously, right? We all recognize that on the most obvious level, right? Like, you can't replace a 2-mana spell with a, 10-mana spell and say, I'm no longer playing Dromoga's Command in my green-white deck. I'm just going to play Ulamog.
I want to talk about a few things. I want to talk about Funovs, and I want to talk about more role players, right? So we're going to start with Funovs. So in this deck, we had Unburial Rites, Mizzia Mortars, Tragic Slip. What the heck? Why would I have come to the conclusion to run one of each of these cards, Casey?
This is kind of a trip down memory lane, so I don't remember exactly what the format looked like around here. But these are all, like, they were good in different matchups, right? They just kind of filled the curve, where, like, if you went with 3 Unburial Rites, you're just playing a totally different deck at this point.
That's true.
If you went with 3 Tragic Slips, you could be caught with your pants down.
Right.
Same with Ultimate Price. So, like,
Mizzia Mortars is what you're talking about.
Where you're just, like, trying to find these little holes in the metagame, and you can't really afford to maybe play 3 Mizzia Mortars because it's a sorcery speed removal spell.
By the way, at this point, no one was playing Bonfire of the Damned. I was ahead of the curve, and I was playing 2, which was, I think Case was right. I think it might have been wrong.
Yeah. So, like, I've played a 4-1 split of Bonfires to Mizzia Mortars.
Right, but no one was playing any Bonfires at this point in the format when we look at this deck. But here's the thing, is, like, the fact that I found the fact that I wanted both of those cards is significant. Mizzia Mortars served a role. There was a Restoration Angel. There was Huntmaster of the Fells. There was, like, every card I could want to possibly kill. Mizzia Mortars did it. Mizzia Mortars killed everything in that format. At the same time, I knew that I wanted more Bonfire of the Dams, right? There were role players in the deck. Casey, there are some significant role players in the deck. We're talking about Disciple, Bolas, and Borderland Ranger.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Borderland Ranger is definitely a role player, right? We spent a while talking about it when we were comparing it to Nissa.
Nissa, yeah.
And it's like Nissa, but, it's not as good because it's not, we don't need to get any further into that.
I'm playing 4 colors, so it might be different, but...
But it's just, its ceiling is much lower. Where Disciple of Bolas is a card with an insanely high ceiling, but a very low floor. Floor is Grey Ogre, because sometimes you're just getting your butt kicked and you don't have any creatures, and you played a Grey Ogre, and that's what happened. So they kind of, there's give and take, right? You can't play all swing for the fences types of cards, and you can't play all cards that don't really do anything, because then when your opponent has a Bonfire of the Damned and sweeps up all your stupid Grey Ogres, your Borderland Rangers.
I look back at this deck, this was 2012. So I look back at this deck 4 years later. This deck is my masterpiece.
Your magnum opus?
Yeah, I think that if I was as good of Magic as I was today, as I was then, I would have top 8 of this tournament. Like, this deck is my masterpiece. And when I look back at it, I see things like Disciple of Bolas. It turned out that 6 months later, this card won a ton of PDQs. It was the best card in the deck. And I had been playing this card for months. But Disciple of Bolas isn't good in a deck without Borderland Ranger, without, like, it filled a role in the deck. The deck, Disciple of Bolas is Disciple of Bolas, right? Like, you actually have to have other things, and then it fills a role.
Yeah, exactly. It lets you, sometimes you'll have a creature that's sort of run its course in the game, right? Like Borderland Ranger. There comes a time where 2/2s just don't matter anymore. And you can cash it in for a couple life and a couple cards. Or Thragtusk, which is a card that had a lot going for it, but there were times where you just needed to make something happen. You were going to lose, and Disciple of Bolas did a lot. It was sort of like a Build Your Own Sphinx's Revelation, which was a very powerful magic card.
So when you look at removal in that deck, one of the things I like seeing is just the number of different removal spells, and I think that speaks to, like, understanding that different removal spells are better.
Yeah, we have one Tragic Slip, two Ultimate Price, one Mizzy Mortars, two Bonfire of the Dam, right?
Right, the different ones are better in different situations, and I think that this is, like, maybe easiest to understand with removal spells because it's the most kind of straightforward play that almost any card in Magic has, but it's true with cards that aren't removal spells as well. Like, Disciple of Bolas may line up a lot worse in matchups with where they have a ton of removal because maybe it's just hard to even stick a creature to sacrifice to it. But, you know, so you had, like, another... I think there was another Tragic Slip in the board, so there might be some matchups where, like, the Tragic Slip is really, really good removal, so you might want to go up. And I'm sure it came out plenty of the time, too, where it just didn't line up well against what you were trying to kill. And I think that, like...
I was a misplay away from top-ending this tournament. It was actually on camera.
You need kind of nuanced thinking when you're building decks a lot of the time, because when there are a lot of options, when you can play like four colors, we saw this a lot in Last Standard, when you're playing like removal heavy decks, there are almost infinite configurations of these spells you can play based on how you prioritize killing things, what matchups you expect to see, and getting those right versus sort of close is, you know, the difference between top eighting and not top eighting a lot of the time.
So, Casey, what do fun ofs do for you? When you see a deck with one... for example, you see Spencer Howland wins a PPDQ with one Is It Charm in his Scapeshift deck. What does that Is It Charm say to you?
That there was something he was looking for. Probably he couldn't decide between another Bolt and a Spell Pierce, right? That's sort of what that card is, where it's like... It gives you flexibility. You get to choose both by paying a premium on the mana cost.
So what does something like this Tragic Slip say to you?
That there's going to be matchups where you are like just kind of trading creatures out, like mid-range mirrors, where having that one mana take one more creature off the board is powerful.
It's just a kill spell. So Casey, when you see a deck that's tuned, and does it include fun ofs?
It can. You know, like, when some people think tuned to mean, like, 9x4, like, this is, we're doing it. Like, we know exactly what cards we want. But that's not always true. There's plenty of kind of great decks that you would play two of this, one of this, one of this, two of this, three of this, one of this, whatever. And just sort of fill out your deck because you know what you're planning to hit and you know, like, in what ratios you need these types of cards.
Is... a fun of the perfect role player for you, Casey?
I think it's a really good example because usually a one of is not something that is a pillar of your deck, right? It's not like the card that your deck is built around.
But when somebody tells you to cut it, you actually just cringe a little inside.
You're like, come on, dude. Like, be real for a second. Like, I'm not cutting this. But like sometimes it's because you're too close. But usually, in general, when you're thinking of a one of that's actually like a really good spot in the deck, it is just a like. Once upon a time, we played a Gruul Charm in a green red devotion deck because that card had every mode of that card was relevant against mono blue devotion.
Yeah,
and
some of the sideboard.
Yeah, exactly. That was a card that was not. It's not like a super powerful main deck card, but it was the right call for that tournament and that format. Because there were times where like it did nothing, but there were so many times where it did everything.
It just won the game on the spot. Whether it wiped their board, it was a two mana
Plague Wind,
or it was two mana you can't block, I win.
Yeah. Those are both powerful modes, but they were only really relevant in kind of that one matchup, right? But it was a popular enough matchup and it was a kind of a bad enough matchup.
And also it worked against the the mono black deck, right? Where they couldn't block, they died.
Sure.
There's some value, too, in just your opponents not knowing your exact 75. I certainly feel this way.
The element of surprise.
But just, if no one is, so even if they could play around Gruul Charm, they're probably not playing around it in, like, a pre-board game.
They're not playing
certainly.
Around
Gruul
Charm. Nobody has ever once played around Gruul Charm.
But there's value in that, right? Like, the fact that no one would ever consider that that was something you could be playing makes it even better. The flip side is you don't want to fill your deck with a bunch of Gruul Charms, because if no one is playing any of them and they are taking up 15 slots in your deck, there's probably a reason.
That nobody's playing them?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that it is possible to go very overboard on one-ups, right? Like, if you look at any deck...
Is it possible to go overboard on role players?
Sometimes, and that's kind of the same thing, where you'll see a deck where it's like... Birthing Pod decks kind of got kind of guilty of this towards the end of the Birthing Pod era, where they were playing like one Kitchen Finks because they had to play so many role players, right? Where like Kitchen Finks was actually kind of the bread and butter of the deck, and you should have been playing more of them, but because you needed a Pontiff, a Spellskite, a Wall of Roots.
Right. So I have cards for all these situations.
A Sin Collector, whatever the 4-mana Sin Collector is called. All these different random little things to like find to make everything in Tumor Exarch, what that card is called, just to make everything sort of balance out. You've gone too far. Science has gone too far at that point, and you're ending up with a very inefficient deck.
So, Casey, what are your thoughts on what makes a Dennis Rodman? What makes a good role player?
Where you need it to do a job, and nothing else will quite do.
Okay. So what does Farseek, Grey Merchant of Asphodel, what do they do that nothing else would do?
Well, Farseek allowed you to play a turn ahead of other mid-range decks.
And also?
And sort of catch up to control decks in terms of power, like card power level, because you were playing at an accelerated rate. So it did everything that you needed it to do, but it was not an objectively powerful card. Grey Merchant of Asphodel lets you play catch-up because that was very much a control deck that tended to fall behind in life total, and because it was using its life total as a resource.
But Owen, Huey, and Reed decided to play Blood Baron instead.
Right, because they realized that that was possible, and also Caves of Koilos was printed right around that time too, and that made it so you weren't playing like Orzhov Guild Gates like an animal.
Oh, so like so you feel like that it might have been a necessity.
Yeah, you may, like, Graymer, nobody who knew things was excited about the prospect of playing Grey Merchant of Asphodel, right? It was just something that you did. It was like...
But also made your deck so greater because you had that part in your deck, right?
Right, it was something you needed.
We hate that card, but at the same time, it made your deck greater. And we're not going to say that it didn't make your deck greater, right?
Right.
Your deck was only the sum of its parts, and Grey Merchant was part of that sum.
Yeah, I mean, if you just kind of decided to cut those four mutilates or whatever, I don't know what other black cards were in standard at that time, your deck would be worse, right? It would be. It wouldn't have been the same deck.
But if you cut them for Blood Barons and played white, your deck was better.
Right, because...
But that wasn't until it wasn't a cost to you.
Right.
Caves of Koilos gave you the cap space to go sign that better free agent, basically.
That's a great point.
Right? That, like, it made it...
I'm gonna start using that. This deck is really aggressive on the mana cap. Has to pay the luxury tax.
I think that like equity cost is something that is huge in Magic, and I think that basketball is a perfect comparison to that in Magic, where other sports might not be.
Just the idea of working with limited resources, right? That like Michael, what is so much,
Michael? When you think of a role player in Magic, what is your perfect role player?
I think of specificity. And I think of diversity. So, like, role players are typically providing you something that is pretty divergent from what the best cards in your deck are providing you. So if you're playing a bunch of Thrag Tusks, your role player is probably not, like, a 4-mana 4-4. Because you already have cards that are, like, doing that, but better. So they're cards that are providing something that your deck doesn't otherwise have. And they're generally filling a rather narrow role because you already have broad, versatile, powerful cards that are actually winning you games. They're cards that are allowing your best cards to shine.
For me, it's just something that... I for a great example of this is in this deck that we were talking about earlier for me. Mm-hmm. I had 3 Deathrite Shamans in my sideboard.
That's true.
That's something that's different.
Yeah, I mean, that card was super powerful, but not really in Standard. What were you playing that for? Just to play against Unburial Rites?
Yeah, it was just to beat the decks. So that's a bad matchup for me, right? And being able to just stop them on a different access is great. This is a role player, right? Sideboard cards, that we haven't even talked about that. They fill roles, right? You board them in to fill a role that you didn't have in your main deck.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the idea of sideboards, right? Some sideboards are, it's sort of more of the same, right? Like, you've got 2 in the main, 1 in the side, 1 in the main, 2 in the side, whatever, that those kind of splits of types of cards. But a lot of times, it's to fill a real hole. I'm boarding in Rest in Peace, because that card is real specific.
Let's take this deck for... On a split, though, I think the... What you're doing is you're boarding in the... So you might have 2 cards that are like, one is slightly better in certain situations, right? So what you're doing is you're making your role players... You're basically... You're saying, okay, this role player is better in this matchup, so I'm going to give it more airtime, right? Like,
so in this format, there were zombie decks and there were green red aggro. In my sideboard, I had 2 Centaur Healers and 2 Rocks Faithbenders.
Yeah, Centaur Healer, I think, is a great example. That's a card that I refer to as a role player a lot, because that card's not good, but like it did what was needed, right? It went out.
So
it did
its
duty.
1 a white and a green for a 3/3. That when it enters the battlefield, you gain 3 life.
Yeah, that card it was a pretty good pickup in draft, and it was not really constructed play, but we played a lot of it in constructed because we needed to. It went out there, it did its duty, it gained you some life, it traded with a creature. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, and Rock's Faithbender.
Poor man's kitchen finks.
Rock's Faithbender was 3 and a white for a 1/5 lifelink, and when you gain life, you gain twice that much.
So when you curve that into Thragtusk, your aggressive opponents cry.
Oh, they actually just can't win.
Yeah, if you curve Centaur Healer, Faithmender, Thragtusk, your red and mono red opponent is like, what has happened to me? What actually...
You were at 6, now you're at...
Well, you go. 16. You obviously go turn 1, Avacyn's Pilgrim, turn 2, Centaur Healer, turn 3, Faithmender, turn 4, Thragtusk. This is actually something that happened to me at the SCG, by the way.
Turn 5, Disciple of Bolas.
This is happened. This is what happens.
Turn 6.
No, you Disciple Bolas your Thragtusk, and then they conceded that it didn't go further than that.
That's probably good.
Yeah, they didn't deserve to go further than that.
Right. They things were so clearly not working out for them by this point.
But the important thing is, what is an important role player to me? It's something that you didn't get otherwise, right? It's something that either bridged the gap, which is the point that I wanted to make, or it did something that you didn't have before. I think that, like, Borderland Ranger is probably the perfect example, right? Where it's like, oh, man, you're playing a Borderland Ranger? It's like, yeah, I'm playing a Borderland Ranger. Because if I'm not playing Borderland Ranger, my deck doesn't work.
Right. This is a kind of deck where you needed your lands, right? And maybe, like, if this deck came out now, then you would probably have just played 26 lands, because that's sort of the style people have adopted rather than playing cards like this. Like Abzan, that came a couple seasons later, they just played 26, 27 lands, and functionally a very, very similar deck to this, but you were only playing 24 lands, because that's kind of what deck building convention was at the time. But Borderland Ranger kind of lets you get around that, sort of play both sides of that field.
Yeah, I think it's the same reason that a lot of those Bug or Jun decks play 25 lands, right? Because they're playing 3 Avacyn, or 3 Nissa. And it's like, no, this fills that role.
Right, these sort of add up to one.
And that's the thing,
land.
Right? It fills the role. It does this thing. It's important to have things that do things. That sounds basic, but it's actually not.
Yeah, is that going to be our next t-shirt? Because that's...
Have things that do things?
It's important to have things that do things. A good life's... You know, that could just be a good motto in general.
That should be in Needlepoint somewhere.
It's important to know why cards are in your deck, right? Why did you put Ranger's Path in your deck, Casey?
So that I could cast massive Sphinx's Revelations.
That's a reason, right? But if you don't know the reason that you signed Dennis Rodman, then Dennis Rodman honestly isn't that important.
Right, yeah. If you're dishing it to Dennis Rodman a lot, and he's just looking at this ball like, what even is this? I know I've only ever seen them in motion as I'm snatching them out of the air or out of people's hands. I've never actually held one for this long before.
Exactly. Right? The importance of, like, it's important. You're laughing, Michael, but it's important. What is the point of Matthew Dellavedova if not to hit people in the face?
To hit them in the knees.
That's way dirtier.
Well, exactly. But I think the point stands, right? It's like, if you are keeping cards in matchups where they're not good or sideboarding poorly or whatever, you're passing the ball to Dennis Rodman in the corner and asking him to shoot threes.
And right? That's not what you want to do. That's why you sign people. What is it's not even European. What is the name of the player that they had on that team? The Spanish player?
I don't know.
Yeah, you got it right.
Kukoc.
Yeah, so that's why they signed him, right?
But he's also not Spanish.
What is he?
I think he's like either Serbian or Czechoslovakian. He's one or the other. He's the opposite of Divac.
Yeah. So derailed. But that's why they signed him, right?
Right.
It's because Dennis Rodman steals the ball. They hand it to Kukoc, and then Kukoc is like, either I shoot this or Michael Jordan's inside the key and he dunks it. And that's it. That's a plan. That's a cohesive strategy that you have created with your players.
Right.
It's the pick and roll. It's the John Stockton, Karl Malone pick and roll. This is your strategy. This is how you've decided you're going to play that game. You're going to Thossy somebody turn one, Pack Rat turn two.
And Pack then... Rat turn three. Pack Rat turn four.
but right, that's the strategy that you've come up with. And the cards that you chose to put in your deck are in there for a specific reason.
Right. Everything, a place for everything and everything in its place, right? You're not playing these random cards that don't really do anything, that aren't real contributors to your deck. Because, what's the point? You know, like, if you're playing, like, Big Red Control, you don't play Lava Spikes. Because why? That would be crazy. It doesn't play the role that you need in your deck. But if you're playing a Burn deck, you don't play Pyroclasm, because that's not part of your strategy, even though they're both completely valid and valuable cards.
Exactly. All right. I think that's it for the training this week. Don't forget to like, I think Guy said it right. Everything has a place, and everything needs to be in that place. Otherwise,
things are out of place.
Exactly.
And then you misplace things, and it's a disaster.
Yeah. Don't forget to check out our clan at MTGO on MTGO by messaging myself or Quentin. I'm at Spencer3andDev. Quentin is at Earthstripe.
URTHSTRYPE.
Boom. Get him.
Boom. Don't forget to check out our sponsor at Oasis Games and at Five Color Combo. Five Color Combo is a great place to purchase tokens, check out Magic content, and they also have the best app for drafting on your iPhone just for fun. Casey's used it. I've used it. It's Magic Draft, and it's the best.
All true.
Yeah. You can also support the podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg and become a patron of the show. We really appreciate everything we get. Starting at $1 a month, you can support us in any way you see fit. People, where can they find you, Casey?
You can find me on Facebook, Casey Tuna Bloodworth, or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst.
Michael?
You can find me on Facebook in the Facebook group Michael Hinderacher, or on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
And Twitch?
Oh, you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/RuckusMH.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland, on Twitter at Spencer13H. I stream every week with Austin Geltz on Think Twice at twitch.tv/CCMTG. Everyone come out every Thursday to watch. And also every week, as often as I can, there's some kind of YouTube content on our YouTube channel. I construct criticism on YouTube. Hashtag would that be good? Casey, what is our hashtag would that be good?
Hashtag would that be good is the community outreach program. It gives you a chance to tweet a question or a thought that you have. We'll read it on air. We'll talk about it.
And we'll make fun of Michael.
and we'll make fun of Michael because that's really what it's for. Now that Manny's not here.
At Magic Mike, remembering when he is supposed to record at CSMDG, hashtag would it be good?
I mean, probably.
So what happened?
I
We thought you were dead. We actually literally did not make your dead jokes worrying that you died.
That's mildly depressing. I mean,
so we didn't... We don't know. What if we make jokes that you're dead and you're actually dead?
I mean, that would be kind of funny, actually. Yeah. Like,
that's what I said.
You know, kind of a macabre way. But
we have to front load them. We have to get them all like in one chunk at the beginning so that way they're easier to edit out if you turn out to be dead.
But I made the rule that we made no your dead jokes.
If I die and you make jokes that I'm dead, I'm cool with it. It's all good.
But also, you would have died.
Yeah, but like it would be funny still, so I'd co-sign it.
How did you die?
I don't know. I mean, I
you didn't show up to the podcast. Apparently. You better have been dead.
Yeah.
Or you must have forgotten when we recorded.
Yeah, I mean the stupider, less exciting option.
So even Matt Kling was worried about you because I saw him a little bit later right after we finished recording, and he was like, "Oh man, Michael has like diabetes. He could be actually dead." I was like,
"That's so aggressive, God! You guys think I'm like..." I mean, I'm stupid, but I haven't died yet. Like, resilient. Stupid, but resilient.
Can we start referring to the new meld cards in hashtag MTGEMA as face and a half cards?
Yeah, because they're like double-faced cards, but they only have half a card on the back, so it's a face and a half.
Okay. So you agree with this?
No, I'm just explaining it to you because you didn't get it. It's fine. I have no opinion on this. That sounds wordy. I'm probably never going to say face and a half cards.
Well, they're not double face. He might be right.
I mean, that's what they are, but I'm not going to
say double, that. Is double face, that's shorter than face and a half?
I think they're the celebrity couple cards. That's by far my favorite thing about...
They're
Yeah, they get celebrity Brizella. Couple names. Yeah, it's awesome.
All right.
Yeah.
Lest we forget, Demonic Pack is legal for 2 more months. Harmless offering. Hashtag would that be good. So I want to do that.
Yeah. So I think there has to be a rule that you cannot have card art with a kitten on it and then donate a demonic pack. Like that is just really messed up, honestly.
It's a
honestly.
Cat with a snake for a tail.
It's a kitty.
It's deliberately. Kitty.
So let's be clear. I don't like cats, but I love kittens. So if they want to harmlessly offer me a kitten, I'm probably going to take it.
Sounds like you're dying to want a demonic pack.
No, that's true because I would take a kitten and then it turns into a cat and then I have a cat and that seems bad.
And then you lose the game.
Exactly.
Also, the flavor, for what it's worth, the flavor text on harmless offering.
That's the only reason that cats exist, right? Is kittens are so much cuter than everything else.
You can't donate a demonic pack and have the flavor text on harmless offering be such an adorable face.
I think you're missing
the face on demonic pack.
This is just
that is not adorable.
This is why
really
cats
adorable.
No, I think this is why cats have survived as long as they have. I'm a dog person, but kittens are way cuter than anything else.
Well, cats are wily too.
But that's a cat, right? That's not a kitten. Kittens are cute and cuddly.
Right, and that's part of their wiliness because they let you take care of them when they're little. Then by the time they're big, they can take care of
themselves. Then they just don't care about you. They just wish you died and went away. It's the cat thing. It's the reason that people love cats is because they love kittens. The thing is that there's an order of cuteness in the world. It goes kittens, otters, puppies. Those are the three cutest things.
I actually like cats better than kittens.
What could you possibly like about a cat?
I like that cats are not needy.
They're not needy. They don't need you. They don't want you. They right. want you dead.
Not needy. That's what he said.
They're not
needy. If they literally will eat your face when you die. It's not a matter of not being needy. It's a matter of like not wishing you were there.
I mean, if my dog died because it didn't eat my face when I was dead, I would be very upset with it. That would be stupid as hell. So,
but it also wouldn't do that.
No, what I'm saying is,
but
like,
it should
do that.
It should be smarter, right? Like if we get stupid. Stuck in the mountains and I starve to death, and you don't eat me and you starve to death like an idiot, that's on you.
So we're saying that cats are the only smart animal, and also they're evil.
That doesn't make you evil. It makes you pragmatic,
right?
Yeah, but they don't. But they feel that way long before you're dead. They wish you would die so that they could eat your face.
Right? Yeah, that's true. A cat will try to eat you if you take an exceptionally long nap. That is true.
This is why otters are the in-between, right? Because they're just cute all the time. That's just an otter.
But then you have an otter.
And what's wrong with that?
I don't know. That sounds difficult. I don't know how to take care of an otter. How do you know that?
Doesn't an otter need 500 gallons of salt water to live in?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
You have to.
They live in rivers, so probably not any amount of salt water.
Well, okay. Okay, they have to buy a river. The little BS. That
still sounds expensive.
River otters.
I just want an otter.
The good otters.
I don't know. If
you had an otter, what would you name it? You're racist against
otters. That's what I just heard.
If you had an otter, what would you name it?
Otter Pop? I don't know.
What's
Billy? Fred?
Ezekiel.
It's an important question.
Is it? Is that the important? The fact that I have an otter is what's important. Divner said I can have an otter.
I would name my otter Reese's.
That's pretty good. That's a good name.
That's my final answer.
I would take an otter, but Divner says
I would name it Face Eater, just to upset you.
But that's just a cat.
My otter would be named Face Eater.
But it also wouldn't do that.
Yeah, but he would train it to.
vaguely block party at the in-laws hashtag would be good. How are those ribs, Casey?
They were way good. That burger was serious also.
Michael, why didn't you come to the block party?
Yeah. I was dead. I was still dead from last week.
What happened?
I hadn't gotten back from my Amber Alert yet.
You just hadn't been found? The police hadn't found you yet?
Yeah. Until just about an hour ago. Still
in the trunk of some car.
Yeah, he got out and said, "What time is it?" And he immediately rushed over here to do this podcast.
Guys, I'm sorry I'm a week late.
Wait, what day is it?
So, in short, what we learned is you should get an otter. Role players are important. Cats will eat your face. And thank you for listening.
See you around.
Bye, everybody. Magic.